So first of all, it is very important to develop the right motivation and then to develop the right perception, and also it's important to receive the right attitude. So with this in mind, today I will explain the fourth chapter of Bodhisattva Jayavatara. The fourth chapter mainly talks about the carefulness or conscientiousness. What it means is that it means taking great care what is to be adopted and what is to be abandoned, or in other words, it means without the three poisons, you put great effort with joy on virtuous deeds, and also protecting your mind from defilements. So, in short, it means taking great care on your attitude, especially your mental attitude. And this conscientiousness or carefulness is one of the best method to engage yourself in virtuous deeds. So it helps you to practice Dharma. This carefulness helps you to perform virtuous deeds. So it is very important to have this carefulness or conscientiousness in order to practice proper Dharma without any distraction or without any negligence. So, there are three main subjects of the carefulness, or three main divisions of the carefulness. First one is carefulness on the precepts. Second, carefulness on the precious human life. And third, carefulness on abandoning the defilements. So first, carefulness to uphold or to preserve the precepts. This also has few subdivisions. Anyway, it means the precepts of bodhicitta is something that we can't abandon, because the great Buddha has examined what is the right and what is wrong for the followers. And as a conclusion of such thorough examination, he found keeping the precepts of bodhicitta or enlightenment mind is very important. So we should not abandon the bodhicitta, or we should not transgress the precepts of bodhicitta. And if we transgress the bodhicitta vow or the precepts of bodhicitta, then as a result of such action, one will be fall down in the three lower realms, where one experience inconceivable sufferings. And also, it will weaken your action, which means it will weaken your action to benefit all the sentient beings. If you abandon the bodhicitta or the precepts, then that is the most serious downfalls for the bodhisattvas. Without bodhicitta, without keeping the precepts of bodhicitta, one will not have the strength or energy or power to help infinite sentient beings. So therefore, it is very important to keep. We all need happiness. We all wish to gain happiness or experience happiness. And this happiness will not come to us by chance. Happiness has its own cause and conditions. So therefore, without altruistic mind, or without helping others, one cannot gain happiness. Because, as it is said by Shantideva himself in the later part of the text, the source of happiness is wishing others to be happy. And source of suffering or sorrow is wishing oneself alone to be happy. So, if you don't have the bodhicitta or altruistic mind, then you don't have strength to help. Not only that, you don't have strength to gain happiness, not only for others, but also for oneself. So therefore, keeping the bodhicitta or enlightened mind is very, very important. And if we transgress the bodhicitta vow and sometimes adopt the bodhicitta or preserve the bodhicitta vow with great care, if we alternate these two, then it means it will delay us to attain bhumis or noble path, or it will delay us to gain inner realizations and attainments. So therefore, we should try to abandon the defilements from every aspect and try to preserve and uphold the bodhicitta and its precepts from every aspect. So, after knowing the consequence of abandoning the bodhicitta and so therefore, we should try our best to keep the bodhicitta. When we first develop bodhicitta or enlightenment mind, at that time, we promise to benefit all the sentient beings with great respect. And after doing such promise, if you don't follow the promise, then it means we are deceiving others. We say something and we do something else. So, if you do a false promise, then as a result or as a consequence of doing such false promise, such person will go down in the lower rungs. And if we think, no matter whatever we do, no matter whatever negative action that we do, we won't go down in the lower rungs because there is a Buddha who can help us, who can guide us, who can protect us. But it is not like that. Buddha is our soul guide, Buddha is our protector, but it does not mean we can do whatever we want and then Buddha will remove all our negative actions, just like washing the dirt by water and soap, or Buddha will not remove our sufferings and negative actions by his own hand. So the way Buddha leads sentient beings from suffering and dissatisfaction to temporary and ultimate happiness is not just through giving blessings, not just through giving power, or not just through miraculous actions. The main effort should come from the practitioner. So, Buddha said, I have shown you the path to gain liberation. Whether you will gain such liberation or not depends on yourself. So it means Buddha has shown what is the right action and what is the wrong action. And Buddha also said, if you follow the right action, then you will gain all these good results. And if you follow the wrong action, then you will experience all the consequence of such bad actions. So this is how Buddha leads sentient beings, by guiding us, by showing us what is the right and what is the wrong. So if you don't keep the bodhicitta or precept of bodhicitta, then we won't be able to gain liberation. We need to experience sufferings. So up to here is a part that explains the carefulness on the precepts of bodhicitta. Now the second one is carefulness on precious human life. This precious human life, which has all the 18 characteristics, is very rare to obtain. As it is mentioned earlier, it is very difficult to obtain from cause point of view, from nature point of view, from example point of view, and from number point of view. So this precious human life is very, very difficult to obtain from many points of view. And when we obtain this, and when we have all the favorable conditions to practice Dharma, at such time, we should not waste, we should not delay our practice, because Although this precious human life is very rare to obtain and also very beneficial, if we can use this life in a proper way, but at the same time, this precious human life is not permanent. It is very impermanent. As we can see, some dies in mother's womb, and some dies when they are 90s or 100s. So there's no certain lifespan of human. Human can die at any age, any time, anywhere. And we can't expect we will gain precious human life, life after life, or all the time. So when we gain such precious human life, which is the best time to practice Dharma, so at such time, or when we have such great opportunity to practice Dharma, we should not waste. Instead, we should try to take essence of such life. We should try to use this in a meaningful way as much as we can. And if we don't obtain the precious human life, or the consequence of not obtaining the precious human life is that if we are not being born as a human, if we are born as a two lower arms beings, then when a person is in a such place, then that person has no time or no chance to practice Dharma. Hell-around beings, they experience inconceivable suffering of hot hells, cold hells, neighboring hells, and semi hells. And hungry ghosts also, they are experiencing great suffering due to hunger and thirst. And animals, we can see, there are many animals on earth, and also there are many animals in the ocean, and all of them have no chance to practice Dharma. Although we say some animals are very intelligent or very smart, but they don't have the ability as we human have. So therefore, they don't have the ability to study, contemplate, and meditate on the Dharma. So therefore, they don't have the opportunity to practice the Dharma as we human can do. So if you don't do virtues, and if you do negative actions all the time, then for eons and eons, we will not hear the sound of higher realms. Then no need to mention that we don't gain a higher rebirth. So, because of this reason, the Buddha gave the example of turtle who is in the ocean, and on the surface there's a one golden yolk with one hole, and this golden yolk on the surface of the ocean is floating towards all the direction by waves. And then turtle is going on the surface of the ocean only one time after every 100 years. So to enter this turtleneck into the one whole golden yolk is very rare. Then Buddha said, attaining or obtaining precious human life is much more difficult or rare than this example. So if we need to go down in the lower rungs by doing negative actions, then it means we have done so many negative actions or countless negative actions which are motivated by our defilements. So as a result of such, there's more chance for us to go down in the lower realms than to gain higher rebirth. Actually, in the sutra, it gives an example saying going from lower realms to lower realms or from higher realms to lower realms is like atoms of earth. And going from lower realms to higher rebirth, higher realms, or higher realms to higher realms is like atoms on the fingernail. So from this, we can understand how rare to gain precious human life, or how rare to obtain higher rebirth. If we don't use this precious human life properly, then that is the biggest deceit. And doing such thing is very foolish thing to do. For example, if a person goes to Jewel Island, and then if that person returns with empty hand, then this thing, it is waste of time and energy, because you are so near to grab the jewels, but you don't grab the jewels, you don't take the jewels. So similarly, when we have this great opportunity, and if we don't use this, and if we live our life just like animals, just to sustain our life without doing any Dharma practice, then it's like an animal. Animal can also sustain their own life. They can look for their own food and drinks. And if you just use this life just to sustain it, just to find food and clothing, etc., then it is not right. We have much greater opportunity than animals. And if we act as an animal, then it's great pity. So, if we don't practice Dharma, then at the time of death, we will feel strong regret. We will feel strong remorse for not doing the right actions when we have the chance. So if you don't use this precious human life, when we have the chance and when we know what is to be adopted and what is to be abandoned, still, if we follow the wrong action and if we don't engage in the Dharma practice or virtuous deeds, then it is like receiving a black magic from others. And the reason or the cause of wasting such precious human life or precious time is due to our own ignorance, our own defilements. They deceive our mind. They deceive our mind not to practice Dharma or to waste our precious time. So if we examine what is the cause of such wastage, then we will know that the cause of such wastage is defilements and mainly the ignorance. So with this, it explains the carefulness on the precious human life. So by doing this, then we can influence ourselves to practice Dharma without any delay and without wasting our time and energy. Now the third one is to have carefulness on abandoning the defilements. First, we should know that defilements are something that we need to abandon. Why we need to abandon this is that defilements will always cause us suffering. Defilement is a fault. So first we need to reflect on the faults of defilements. So here the faults means, although defilements such as anger, ignorance, attachments, and other negative thoughts, they don't have legs and hands. And also, they are not smart. But same time, they use our body as their servant, because defilements control our body. Defilements makes us to engage in the negative actions. So defilement is the one that controls our body and mind. And defilement is actually not the nature of the mind. The nature of the mind is pure from very beginning or beginningless time. But the defilement is like a gas that stays in our mind. And not only it stays in our mind, but it gives us suffering. It harms us. So practicing patience or tolerance towards defilements, especially the anger, is not right. It's not the right object of patience. Although we might have external enemies, but they are not the worst enemy. The worst enemies are not external. The worst enemy is within ourselves or within our mind. So the worst enemy is our own defilement, especially our own anger. If all the human beings and gods became our enemy, then if they became united and unitedly if they attack on us, but still they can't give us the suffering of hell arms on our human body. So who can give us the suffering of hell arms? Then the answer is only our mind, only our default mind or anger can give us the sufferings of hell realms. So therefore, we can say the defilement, especially the anger, is our worst enemy. And this enemy can last for longer period of time than any other human enemies. If you have human enemies, then that will last for a few decades or several decades, not more than that. Because our life itself is not more than several decades, or maximum about 100 years. So if we have an enemy in this life, then that enemy will not last forever. It is within 100 years or several decades. But our internal enemy, the defilement, is not only for several decades or 100 years or few hundred years or several hundred years. It is there from beginningless time, which means we have been associating with this defilement for eons and eons. So we can't be good at defilements. The more you try to please the defilements, the more defilements will harm us. So therefore, it is important to abandon. It is important not to be patient towards the defilements. So we should have strong resolution to defeat or to eliminate the defilements. So we should have a strong courage to abandon these defilements. For example, in our worldly life, some people, they can't sleep until they can defeat their own enemies. So similarly, we should have strong wish, we should have strong thought, or we should put great effort to destroy or to defeat our worst enemy, which is defilements. So until we can defeat such enemy with positive thought, we can't defeat our internal enemy by anger. We have to defeat our internal enemy or the defilements with our loving kindness, compassion, and bodhicitta. So we should put great effort until we can defeat such defilements. So we should not lose our hope, because if we adopt the right remedy, if we adopt the right antidote, then there's no reason why we can't abandon or defeat these defilements. So in our worldly life, when a soldier who kills many enemies, such person or soldier is considered as a very brave person, or such person or soldier is considered as a hero. But that is not the actual hero. The actual hero is the one who can defeat the defilements. by undertaking great hardship. Defeating defilements is the source of happiness for oneself and others. So, in order to gain happiness, we should try our best, we should put great effort to defeat the defilements. For example, there are many persons in this world. They are taking great hardship just to sustain their life or just to earn their livelihood. So in order to earn their livelihood, they bear the hardship. They can walk under the hot sun or in a cold weather. They can bear all these hardships just to gain their livelihood. So earning their livelihood is a limited benefit, or it, because that can help one person or their family members, and that hardship will not help countless beings. But defeating defilements, if we undertake hardship or put great effort to defeat defilements, then that is the source of happiness, not only for oneself and one's own family, but that is the source of happiness for all the sentient beings or countless sentient beings. So therefore, it is far greater to bear the hardships in order to defeat defilements than to bear hardships just to earn our own livelihood. So it means if we can bear the hardship just to gain livelihood, then why not we can't bear the hardship to benefit all the sentient beings? So we must bear the hardship to defeat the defilements in order to prevail to peace and harmony, or to gain happiness for all the beings. So, when we develop bodhicitta, we promise to liberate all the beings from samsara, liberate all the beings from their defilements. And after having such promise, if ourselves cannot liberate it or cannot liberate from the defilements, then our words and actions are not going together. So therefore, we must not change our mind. We must have confidence, and we must have firm belief and firm thoughts to abandon the defilements. And if we can defeat the defilements, or if we can eradicate the defilements from our own mind, then it won't return. It is not like impeaching our human enemy. If we impeach our human enemy to another place or to another location, then that person might gain strength and power in that place, and then that can return and they can revenge on us. But the beauty of eradicating the defilement is that if we can eradicate, then it won't return. Once you eradicate the defilement, then it means you have eradicated this defilement forever. It won't return, not like our human enemies. So actually there are two ways to abandon. One is just to suppress by developing loving kindness and compassion. But if you just suppress, then it might return. But here we are talking about the education of defilements, which is through the realizing the selflessness directly. So once you have such wisdom that can eradicate the defilement, then that defilement will never return to control our mind and body. So in this fourth chapter, it mainly explains about the carefulness or conscientiousness on three main subjects: carefulness on the precept of bodhicitta, carefulness on the precious human life, or difficulty about precious obtaining the precious human, difficulty of obtaining the precious human life, and the carefulness of abandoning the defilements. So with these three main divisions or main subjects of this carefulness, it concludes this fourth chapter. So in short, by reflecting on the meaning of carefulness, as it is explained in this chapter, we should put great effort to practice this carefulness. We should follow or we should apply this into action. If you just listen about carefulness, then it is not enough. Having the intellectual understanding of carefulness is not enough. We must implement, we must apply into our daily life. For example, when a person is sick, then that person will consult a skillful doctor. And just by listening to doctor's instruction and advice will not cure the sickness. To cure the sickness, the patient needs to follow the doctor's advice, not just listening or understanding the meaning of advice, but after that, that person should follow the instruction. That person should apply the advice into their daily life. Then through that, that person can recover fully from the sickness. So similarly, just by listening or having the intellectual understanding on the carefulness will not be able to abandon the defilements. So to be effective, to have an impact on our mind, we must apply, we must implement generally speaking the action that we do, and our mind should have cause and effect relationship. Doing virtuous deeds is a cause, and effect or the result is through that action we should have an impact on our mind. If our mind has not changed by doing lots of practices, if we still have same defilements, same negative thoughts, and if we haven't increased our positive thoughts, and if we fail to decrease our negative thoughts, then it means we are not making the relationship between our action and our mind. If you don't make this connection or relationship, then it won't yield result. It won't be effective. The whole purpose of doing virtuous action is to have an impact or to subdue our mind, to control our wild mind, or to subdue our wild mind. If we fail to subdue our mind, then it is not effective, then it is not a genuine Dhamma practice. The Buddha has bestowed enormous amount of teaching. The purpose of all this teaching is to tame our mind, to subdue the mind of the followers. So, now in the next chapter, or the fifth chapter, it mainly explains about controlling our own mind. And to control our mind, or to protect our mind from defilements, we need two main positive thoughts. These are called mindfulness and vigilant introspection. So, this chapter, or the fifth chapter, has three main classification or divisions. First one is, we need to control our mind in order to keep the precepts. Second, we need to keep mindfulness and vigilant introspection as a method to control our mind or to protect our mind. And third main subject is to apply the mindfulness and vigilant introspection into our mental continuum with great effort. So the first one is to control our mind or to protect our mind in order to keep the precepts of bodhicitta. In order to keep our precepts, we must keep or we must protect our mind. If we let our mind to become wild, if we let our mind to associate with the defilements, then we won't be able to preserve the bodhicitta or the precepts of bodhicitta. So first, it explains the consequence of not protecting or not controlling the mind. So, for example, if you don't train a wild elephant, then that wild elephant can destroy houses, farms, and can even attack the human beings. But it's more harmful to have a wild mind than a wild elephant. Wild mind cannot destroy as great as wild mind. So wild mind is more danger than wild elephant. So wild elephant cannot destroy as much as wild mind. So therefore, we must control, we must train our mind, we must subdue our mind, we must tame our mind. If we are able to tame our mind, then we will be free from fearfulness and we will be able to engage in the virtuous actions. If we can control the mind, then we will be free from all the fear, such as fear of attacking from fearful animals, such as lion, tiger, and other fearful ones. As a power of our positive thought or mind, the fearful animals will not attack such a great being. Because if they attack, then they will give us the pain and suffering. But these great beings has not done any actions to experience such suffering. So therefore, if they control their mind, then naturally all these fearful animals will become peaceful and will not attack such great practitioner. So controlling our own mind and able to control all the other fearful ones. Generally speaking, all the fears and sufferings are not caused by external factors alone. The main factor is came from within ourselves. It seems like the source of suffering or the cause of suffering is from others. But if you think carefully or if you examine thoroughly, then we will realize that the main cause of all these sufferings is one's own defilements, one's own negative thoughts. As a result of our negative thoughts, then we face many problems, we meet many fearful ones, and also we receive attacks from such fearful ones. So, therefore, all the fear and infinite sufferings are caused by one's own improper mental actions. Improper actions in general, and especially improper mental actions or negative mental actions. as a result of our negative mind, we experience the suffering of hell realms and suffering of other realms in the samsara. So these are the consequence of not controlling the mind. Now the benefits of controlling the mind or before explaining the benefits of controlling the mind, first still we are explaining about the is consequence of not controlling the mind. No, we are talking about the benefits of controlling the mind. The first one is we will be able to abandon all these fears. Second, we will be able to accomplish or we will be able to engage in the virtuous deeds. So we are still talking about the benefits of protecting or controlling our mind. So what kind of actions that we can accomplish? And the answer is, we will be able to accomplish the six perfections. And all these perfections are very important. And to keep this perfection, it is very important to control our mind. All these perfections are based on perfect mind, not on perfect physical actions or perfect verbal actions. So, if the meaning of perfection of generosity means negating all the poverties, then still there are lots of poverties. Still we can see many poor beings, poor people. So, it is not perfect. So, here, the meaning of perfection of generosity does not mean that we can able to remove all the properties. So it means the wish to give all the things to others without having any stingy thoughts. And that also not giving to a limited being, but giving to all the beings without exception. So such wish or such thought is called the perfection of generosity. And similarly, the perfection of moral conduct and patience and others are also based on perfect mind or perfection of mind. So perfection of pure moral conduct means wish to be free from harming others or wishing not to harm any beings. And perfection of patience means not the cessation of anger or not the cessation of enemy, but it means taming our own anger. If we can control our mind, if we can tame our own anger, then it's like taming all the enemies or defeating all the enemies. For example, you can't cover whole universe by a ladder, but if you can wear the shoe with a leather sole, then wherever you step, you are stepping on a ladder. So it is like covering whole earth by a ladder. So similarly, perfection of patience does not mean ceasing all the anger in this world or in this samsara, but it means controlling our own anger. And the perfection of enthusiasm. Actually, this fourth perfection is not just an effort. It's an effort with great joy. So, if you put great effort in doing negative action, then that is not a perfection. So, here, perfection means doing virtuous deeds with great effort and joy is called the perfection of enthusiasm or this fourth perfection. And that also depends mainly on the perfect mind. If your mind is distracted, then if your physical body and verbal action try to put great effort, then it won't yield a good result. It won't be effective because your mind is distracted. Your mind is not focused on your action. So the main effort should come from your mind and not from your body and speech. And also, the fifth one is concentration, the perfection of concentration. That also depends on your mind. Mentally, if you don't do concentration, or if you don't focus on your action or on the object single-pointedly without any distraction, or if you don't pay attention to your action or to your object, then no matter how many times that you recite, or no matter how many hours that you sit properly, it won't yield result. So main thing is concentration. Without concentration, if you try to sit in a meditational posture for a long period of time, or recite recitations or prayers or mantras for a long period of time, it won't be effective. It won't yield a proper result. So, for the fifth perfection also, the mental concentration or the mind is very important. The perfect mind or the mental concentration is very important. And the sixth perfection is the perfection of wisdom or the discriminative awareness. And this perfection is very important. Actually, without this perfection, we can't be liberated from the samsara. We can't be perfect. Actually, perfection in Sanskrit is called paramita. It's like something like crossing the ocean or going beyond this ocean. It means liberating from the samsara. So without this wisdom or discriminatory awareness, one can't be perfect, one can't be liberated from the samsara. So without this perfection of wisdom, the other five are not called the perfections. And this perfection of wisdom also depends mainly on perfect mind. So, if we can control our mind, then we can have a perfect mind, and due to this, we can accomplish these six perfections. So these are the benefits of controlling our mind. So the controlling mind has two aspects. One is able to abandon all the fear, and second aspect is able to accomplish all the virtues or all the perfections. Now, we need to protect or preserve mindfulness and vigilance as a method to protect our mind. Mindfulness is remembering what to do and what not to do. And then a vigilant introspection means realizing what is to be adopted and what is to be abandoned without making any mistake. Or a thought that is good at knowing what to do and what not to do. I think this is kind of a definition of these two positive thoughts, the mindfulness and vigilant introspection. So first it explains the importance of having these two positive thoughts. It says, those who wish to control their mind should have the mindfulness and the introspection. Even if it costs your own life, we must preserve these two positive thoughts. So it shows how important to preserve these two positive thoughts. Now the second subject is the faults of not preserving these two thoughts. For example, if a person is afflicted by a sickness, then that person becomes very weak. That person will not have a strength or power to do strong action. Similarly, those persons who lack these two positive thoughts will not have a strength or not have the power or energy to accomplish great activities. So this is a fault of not preserving these two positive thoughts. Now it explains the faults of lacking these individual thoughts. First, the fault of not preserving the vigilant introspection. So if we don't have this, then no matter how much time that we spend on study, contemplation, and meditation, this wisdom, the wisdom of studying, contemplation, and meditation will not remain in our mind. It is like a bottomless container. If you pour a water in the bottomless container, the water can enter into the container, but it will not remain in the container. It will leak because it doesn't have bottom, or it is a bottomless. So similarly, no matter how much wisdom that we gain through studying, contemplation, and meditation, it won't remain in our minds. Just like a bottomless container. And also, if you don't have this vigilant introspection, then we won't be vigilant on our action. We won't examine what is the right thing to do and what is the wrong thing to do. So without this, we won't be able to keep our pure moral conduct. We won't be able to keep all the rules or precepts. So, in short, the fault of not preserving or not holding the vigilant introspection is that the wisdom will not remain in our mind, and also we won't be able to keep all these rules. Now, the faults of not protecting or not holding the mindfulness is that when there's no vigilant introspection, then we will also lose our mindfulness. And without mindfulness, we won't remember what is the right thing to do or wrong thing to do. So without this mindfulness or without this remembrance, we can't control our mind. We can't control our actions. We do wild actions. And as a result of such actions, we will fall down in the lower realms. So when there's no mindfulness, when we lack mindfulness, then our defilement will grab this opportunity to control our mind. And as a result of such, we will experience more and more sufferings in this life and also in the future lives. Now, after realizing the consequence of not preserving these two thoughts, now it explains the method to preserve these two positive thoughts. So, we need to preserve our mindfulness. And sometimes if we lose our mindfulness, then we should reflect on the consequence of losing our mindfulness. And by remembering the consequence, we should bring our mindfulness back to our mind. So by reflecting the benefits of having the mindfulness, and also by reflecting on the consequence of losing the mindfulness. So with these points, by reflecting on these points, we will be able to preserve our mindfulness. So reflecting on the consequence and benefits is a method for us to control or to preserve our mindfulness. And to have this mindfulness, we can associate ourselves with our guru, with our Dhamma friends. So they can also influence us to preserve our mindfulness. And also we should remember that Buddhas are always in front of us all the time. At present, we don't see, but it does not mean Buddhas are not there. And we should also understand that whatever we do, Buddha will know. So we can't hide any actions to Buddha. Buddha will know everything. Buddha is omniscient. So there's no chance for us to hide any bad actions to Buddha. So because of this also, we should try to preserve our mindfulness. As it is given the example of poison. If you take poison by mistake in front of many people, then it will harm us. And if you take poison secretly, without telling to anybody, then still it will have some effect. It will cause you to have pain, and it can also cause your dear life. So similarly, we should know that wherever we do our wrong actions or negative actions, Buddha will know. We can't hide. We can't deceive the Buddha. We can't deceive our law of karma. So with such knowledge or with such understanding, we should try to keep the mindfulness all the time. And as a result of such it can help to develop the vigilant introspection. So as a result of keeping mindfulness can help us to develop the vigilant introspection, or it can help us to restore the vigilant introspection that we have lost in the past. Now it explains the actual method to preserve the vigilant introspection. We should have this thought before engaging in any actions. So with this thought, it will examine whether we should engage in such action or not. It will examine it. And as a result of examination, if we found that such action is wrong, then we should abstain from doing it. If we realize that such action is beneficial, then we should engage in such action. So vigilant introspection will inspect or will examine whether we should do this or not. So it is important to have this positive thoughts before starting our action or before engaging in any action. And also, during the action, we also need the vigilant introspection. So it means we should examine our physical action, our verbal action, and our mental action. And after examining, if we realize that such action is bad, then we should abstain. We should try to abandon. We should not let our body, spirit, and mind to do such action. And if it is right, if it is beneficial, not only for you, but if it is beneficial for all the sentient beings, or if it is beneficial for others, then we should do, we should engage in such actions, we should start such actions. So, whether our action is right or wrong depends on the purpose of our action. Sometimes, for a greater purpose, we need to relax our attitude. So it depends on the situation, it depends on purpose, what purpose that you are doing. So, after examining the actions, then we need to control the actions. We should abstain from doing wrong things or doing things or actions that are not meaningful or that are meaningless, like spending our time on talking idle gossips or unnecessary subjects, subject or topic that are not beneficial to oneself or others, mainly that are not beneficial for all the sentient beings. And also we shall not do unnecessary actions like digging the earth or cutting the grass, etc., without any purpose. So, when we start to do physical action or when we start to do verbal actions, before doing it, first we need to examine what kind of motivation that we have behind these actions. If our actions that we are about to do is motivated by defilements, then we should not do. Because action that is motivated by defilements are always negative actions, and that is always the cause of sufferings. So we should examine whether our action is motivated by defilements or not. If it is, then we should not do such actions. And instead, we should engage in virtuous deeds. So, we should promise to do virtuous deeds all the time. And we can reflect on the benefits of doing virtuous deeds. So by reflecting the benefits, we can engage or we are able to engage in the virtuous deeds. So when we do these virtuous deeds, we should do with great respect and with right motivation. So here, virtuous deeds means not only physical or verbal virtuous deeds, but mainly the mental virtuous deeds or virtuous deeds that are motivated by positive thoughts, such as bodhicitta, etc. So if we are motivated by positive thoughts, then we will put great effort with great joy to do virtuous deeds or to do an action that is beneficial for all the beings. And if our mind is not doing the right thing, then we need to meditate on the antidotes of not doing such virtuous deeds. So here, it means we need to reflect on the difficulty of obtaining pleasure from our life. So by reflecting on this, it will help us or it will influence us to do virtuous deeds or to engage in Dharma practice. And second, after reflecting on the difficulty of obtaining pleasure from our life, then we need to take the essence of this pleasure from our life. And to take the essence, first we need to know that this life alone is not a proper thing to do, or having attachment to this life alone is not very essential. We can't associate with our own dear body forever. We can only associate with our own dear body for several decades, maximum 100 years or so. So at the time of death, we need to separate. Our mind will separate from our body. Our body will be disposed in one way or another. At that time, we will not have attachment to our body because we are forced to leave our mind from the body. So, at the time of death or after dying, our dead body will be eaten by animals or will be disposed in other ways. And at that time, if we can't keep our body, then why we need to take great care, or why we need to have strong attachment when our mind is in the body? If we don't have attachment when our mind is not there in the body, then similarly, we should not have a strong attachment when our mind is in the body. But because body is same, whether the body that is with the mind and the body that is separated from the mind, it's the same body, the same continuation of the body. But we will not protect our dead body, but we will protect our living body. Actually, if you think carefully, then there's no reason why we have to have so much attachment on our living body. Our living body is like a tool, it's like a vehicle for us to do a good action. Our mind is like the person who is on the vehicle or in the vehicle. Although it is important to take care of our health, our body, but without having strong attachment. Having strong attachment to our body is not very essential. So we need to use this body in a proper way, which means we need to use this body to do virtuous deeds or good actions. So we should think that this body is just a container of our mind, of our contained mind. For example, the boat is like a container for us to use when we cross the river or ocean. So we are the content, and the boat is the container for us to use to cross the river or ocean. Similarly, to cross the ocean of samsara, we need to use this body, which is like a boat. So, if we use this body in a proper way, then not only we can gain happiness in this life, but we can be liberated from the samsara for the sake of all the beings. And not only that, we can transform this ordinary body or ordinary sentient beings into the Buddha. I think with this I will conclude my today's teaching. At the end, we should dedicate all our past and present merits or the merits of three times to gain Buddhahood for the sake of all the sentient beings. So with this in mind, we will do the dedication prayer.